$5 Bin Podcast with Mark and Rick.
And now with a splash of Brian.
Hello, Cinemaniacs, and welcome to the $5 Bin Podcast. This is one of our mini episodes. I'm your host, Mark Dittleman, and with me are my co-host, Brian Higgins.
Hey there.
And no, Rick, he is doing fatherly Ricktivities.
Ricktivities.
Because he's got littlins.
Lillins.
Lillins. He's got little ones, almost like little gremlins.
Yeah.
Running around, causing chaos, and that's what kids do, right?
Yes.
They sing New York, New York.
They
and
do.
They hide in salad bars and eat frozen yogurt. Kids and gremlins are basically the same.
They're basically
right?
the same.
Yeah. If you couldn't tell, Gremlins was actually the reviews that we did this past week. Gremlins 2, the new batch,
mind you.
A reminder to the Cinemaniacs, we did the original Gremlins a couple Christmases ago.
Way back.
As our Christmas movie, and has taken us a long time to circle back. We don't always get to sequels right away.
We like to
space them out, you know, and see if we remember anything from the first one. So yeah, Gremlins 2 of the new bat. Brian, did you have any kind of follow-up thoughts about the movie?
Just a fun movie.
It's fun, yeah.
Since we did the main episode, I did watch the Key and Peele.
Yeah, I told you to watch that.
That you referred to. It's nuts, because they're right. They're talking about all the crazy stuff that's in the movie, and it's just...
They actually go through each of the kind of wacky personalities of
the
Gremlins, and they tell each writer to design your own gremlin, and as Peele is almost playing like a Hollywood type from like the Mannequin series, and he's just like, it's in the movie, until he finally gets to like, Hulk Hogan breaking the fourth wall? That's crazy. It's in the movie. It's kind of funny, and if you had never seen Gremlins 2, at the end they put up all this is actually in the movie, which we of course know, having seen it. If you never had, you'd be like, there's no way this
and
stuff's in the movie.
You know that there was just one writer in the room obsessed with Gremlins 2. It was like, we have to do a sketch about Gremlins 2.
Because it's like, a very weird,
crazy,
obscure, specific reference to parody in a sketch.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's crazy.
It's like the papyrus sketch on SNL.
Exactly.
Where it was just one writer being like, but they used the papyrus font.
Which we automatically made sure Rick saw, because we all know that Rick has qualms about font uses in movies.
Indeed.
So, obviously, this was going to ring home for him. So, it was great. I mean, I love that sketch. I think it's great. I think it's so funny. So, yeah, so Gremlins is still great, still amazing. As I said in the full reviews, I watched this movie so many times, even more than the first one. And there's so much stuff that they just throw in there, even the kitchen sink. It just doesn't seem like it should work, but it does. It's a fun movie.
Yeah.
So speaking of Gremlins 2, the new batch, by the way, this is a movie that probably, of all the reviews that we've done, the most fun facts or tidbits I've found online about it. It just goes on for ages and ages. This is a behind the scenes. So they had a deleted scene where the gremlins actually released all the animals in the Splice of Life lab. I mean, you saw the aftermath of that in the movie. They were running down the hallway. But during the filming of the scene, the monkeys in the lab were so genuinely terrified of the gremlins puppets that they didn't even move. They wouldn't leave the cage.
Aww.
They're very scared of the
monkeys.
I think we mentioned this as well, because obviously Gizmo is idolizing Rambo from the clips he sees. That's how he goes to war. They did get the permission from Sylvester Stallone to use the clip and his audio from it, so he gave the go-ahead. The opening, so remember the movie opens and we get this kind of aerial shot going over New York City.
Yeah.
That was actually a shot from Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Oh.
They used that shot for this movie. When Christopher Lee, who played Dr. Catheter, was cast in this movie, one of the first things he did was apologize to Joe Dante, who also directed The Howling in 1981, for appearing in The Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf in 1985.
Oh my.
So apparently Joe Dante wasn't on board with the sequel, it seems like.
Sounds like it.
Leonard Maltin appears as himself, as we saw. He's the host of the Movie Police. And he holds up a video version of the movie. However, his rant is cut short when gremlins pounce on him as a result. In his annual movie guide, he gives Gremlins two three stars, out of a possible four, and refers to this scene as a gratuitous cameo, though he doesn't say he's actually in the movie.
Gives it
two three stars.
Gives
Gremlins
2
three stars. I read that wrong.
The movie, Gremlins 2, receives 3 out of 4 stars from Leonard Maltin.
2 3-stars. Yeah, that would be funny. Here you go. You brought this up a little bit, because in the movie, we talked about how the Futtermans showed up. And we're kind of like, well, what happened to Billy's parents? In the original script, Randall Peltzer was to return after the gremlins were killed at the end and give to Gizmo his newest invention, a wetsuit-like thing that would prevent Gizmo from ever getting wet again, therefore preventing any sort of gremlin problems in the future.
Oh.
Provided that he never ate after midnight. The scene was all set to shoot, and the actor who played Mr. Peltzer, Hoyt Axton, as you recall, was available to shoot the scene. But the filmmakers figured that the movie was already running too long, and they never used the scene anyway, so they didn't actually film it.
Oh, that's too bad.
And it's like, you know, don't you want to leave yourself open for Gremlins 3 somehow?
Yeah.
You know, kind of kiboshes that. Mohawk is a recreation of Stripe from the first one, and is filmed and voiced by the same actor.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here's that fact that you brought up, Ryan. Joe Dante told in an interview in 1990 that Warner Brothers opened their movie directly opposite Dick Tracy in an attempt to keep the box office record set by Batman from being broken.
Now, I love Dick Tracy.
I do like Dick Tracy. Great movie.
I was so caught up in the Dick Tracy fever that,
yeah.
Like, obviously I was very excited. Was the zeitgeist that excited about it?
I didn't think so. I thought that, like, I had watched old Dick Tracy cartoons
yeah,
and stuff.
Like the,
but I
they
think,
had brought those back on TV.
I don't think he was as big. There wasn't as much a hype about it, but when it came out, it definitely kind of came.
Like, I remember it was they had the McDonald's tie-ins. Well, you keep going. I'm going to look up the opening weekend for Dick
Tracy.
Yeah,
why don't you look that up? So after Gremlins came out in 1984, it became such a surprise success, Warner Brothers wanted a sequel immediately. But Joe Dante kind of had enough Gremlins for a while after that, so he declined. But they kept going on without him, and they got various directors and writers, and some of the storylines that they were considering had the Gremlins going to, like, Las Vegas and even the planet Mars. These were kind of original script ideas.
Oh.
After those ideas fell through, they finally asked Dante to help again, who agreed on the condition that he be allowed to do anything he wanted.
Well, that
certainly was the condition, yeah.
He certainly did whatever he wanted.
And he got a bigger budget, but in an interview and on the DVD commentaries, Dante has stated that he felt Gremlins 2 was a case of them waiting too long to make, you know, 6-year difference here. Not actually that bad in today's standards. There's been longer. But he felt that kind of hurt the success of the sequel a little bit in the box office because they waited too long.
So speaking of the box office,
yep.
Batman's opening weekend was $40,489,746.
Oh.
So about $40 million, we'll say.
Yeah.
So the weekend where this came out, where Gremlins 2 came out, it was the weekend of June 15th through 17th, 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Tracy did win the weekend with $22,500,000. So a little under half, I would say.
Yeah.
So it was a good idea to counter program there, or a little over half, I should say. But number two was another 48 hours at $10.7 million. Number three was Total Recall at 10.2. Gremlins 2 was number four at $9.7 million.
That's not bad.
That's
pretty respectable. Yeah.
So another 48 hours was in its second week, I think.
Okay.
It was number one the week before. Yep. It was in its second week. Total Recall was in its third week. Number five that weekend was Back to the Future Part 3 in its fourth week with $4.8 million. And in its 13th week, Pretty Woman was number six.
Wow.
With $3.3 million.
That's crazy.
And the only other new movie in the top 12 that weekend was the reissue of The Adventures of Milo and Otis at $1.7 million, putting it at number eight.
Re-release of Milo and Otis?
Yeah.
I didn't even know they did that.
Back in the late 80s, early 90s,
they used to do that a lot. Yeah. They don't really do that so much anymore. Well, they do keep it in theater longer, though.
Sometimes.
The movie that Grandpa Fred is presenting on his show is called The Attack of the Octopus People. But really, that movie is that they're showing, they call it Attack of the Octopus People, but it's actually called Octoman from 1971, and it featured the first costume design by Rick Baker.
Oh.
Who is one of the producers, the
That's
co-producers
a fun little
on
Easter
this.
Egg.
Yeah, exactly. The character of Grandpa Fred, speaking of him, is obviously based on Al Lewis's character Grandpa Munster from the television series The Munsters. In the 80s, Lewis, as Grandpa Munster, hosted a show on TBS called Super Scary Saturday, where he would show old monster movies just as Fred does in Gremlins 2.
Oh.
So that's where they got the idea for that. The scene where Gizmo dances in the lab, he actually dances to I'm Ready by Fats Domino.
Yes.
But originally was supposed to be dancing to Dancing with Myself by Billy Idol.
Oh.
They couldn't get the permission, though. They found another song that was upbeat. Oh, and we did talk about this a little bit in the main episode. When Billy is trying to explain the rules regarding the Mogwai to Forrester's staff, they find him quite absurd and interrogate him on the application of these rules. This scene originates from the fact that the filmmakers themselves saw the rules as irrational, and some questions in the scene were based upon queries raised by fans of Gremlins 1984.
That's
what we said, exactly.
Yeah, like the comment section.
The comment section addressing the questions that people had after the first movie. And as you said before, so Rick Baker, he did get interested in taking over the job when he was able to make the Gremlins and Mogwais more diverse.
Yes.
Instead of keeping just like the same template as the original one, he'd actually gone to a couple other special effects designers as well, Chris Wallace and Rob Botten, but they had turned it down. And apparently, we had mentioned that John Astin from the Addams Family, so we have Addams Family and Munsters references in this movie. He plays the janitor. Apparently, Gizmo goes, "Gomez!"
Oh.
I didn't pick that up. Yeah, I didn't pick that up. This is like three levels deep of Easter egg here. In the scene when Mohawk drinks a potion which enables him to turn into a centroid spider, the pulsating sound effect is from the movie Tarantula from 1955.
Oh.
The effect was originally recorded for the Martian War Machines in the War of the Worlds from 1953.
Well, there you go.
Wow. That's just like recycling movie audio over and over.
Well, we did hear the Wilhelm scream.
We did hear that as well. Yes, that's true. And Chris Wallace, who was one of the guys who turned down doing the effects for Gremlins 2, he had actually created the Gremlins for the first one, but declined so he could work on the effects and also direct The Fly 2 from 1989. Tim Curry was considered for the role of the voice of the brain gremlin.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that in the main.
Yeah, that would have been pretty good.
I think it would have come off more sinister than Tony Randall.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Yeah, I think so too. You want him to just be educated but not evil.
Yeah, even though he is evil.
Chris Columbus, who had wrote the original script of Gremlins for the first movie, he was not available to write for this one because he was directing Home Alone.
That would make sense.
And as you had mentioned, in the original home version of the movie, instead of the Hulk Hogan scene, they had the John Wayne scene. That's kind of how, you know, he got the Gremlins back into the movie.
Yep.
But the movie was actually from the footage from 1970s Chisholm.
So that was
the movie. In the original script, as we mentioned again, Daniel Clamp, played by John Glover, evolved from being the central villain into a kind of nice guy, while the character played by Robert Ricardo, Forrester, took over most of the villain role.
Yes.
Chuck Jones was lured out of retirement to provide the cartoon segments in this film.
Oh.
The Warner Brothers ones. In a deleted scene, three of the main gremlins, George, Lenny, and Daffy, snuck into Grandpa Fred's studio and help him host the show, which worked because Grandpa Fred's show was supposed to be scary.
There you go.
So they just showed up and helped host
the
show.
That works perfectly.
Robert Picardo actually controlled Greta, the female gremlin, when it was attached to him instead of the puppeteers because the puppet had so much contact and movements with his character. The technique is also used in the scene where Daniel Clamp pushes the gremlin in the paper shredder.
Oh.
So they work the gremlins themselves.
That
that's kind of cool.
That's really cool.
Just end on, they just kind of list all the cameos that happen throughout the movie.
Yes, so many cameos.
Hulk Hogan as himself, which we knew.
Yep.
John Astin as the janitor, which we knew as well. Henry Gibson as the employee they got fired. Bubba Smith as himself trying to save Dit Buckus, who was attacked at the salad bar by the vegetable one. Leonard Maltin as himself giving a bad review of Gremlins. Jerry Goldsmith, along with his wife, Carol Heather Goldsmith, as customers at the frozen yogurt counter. Charles S. Haas, the screenwriter, as Casper, Dr. Catheter's assistant. Jason Presson as Alex, the yogurt jerk. That's the guy from The Explorers.
Yep.
Julia Sweeney. As Peggy, the Splice of Life lab receptionist. Finally, Gremlins 2, The New Batch, became the second Steven Spielberg project to involve the Looney Tunes characters. The first being Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and the third being Tiny Toons.
Oh.
So there you go. We'll end on some cartoonists. And I think ending on cartoons.
Speaking of cartoons, I think that transitioned us well into our King of the Thing.
Oh, yes, the King of the Thing.
King of the Thing.
I am the king of...
He is the king of the thing.
King of the Thing. So for this one, we decided to take a look at some of our favorite cartoon characters in the form of the Looney Tunes.
Okay, so just Looney Tunes characters.
Yes.
Okay.
So as we discussed, this is in many ways a live-action cartoon, but
and
we do feature Daffy Duck,
yes.
Bugs Bunny and Porky Pig, kind of bookending the film.
Exactly, yeah.
Which
I loved.
So we're going to take a look at some of those classic Looney Tunes characters. We have 16 characters in a bracket. And, of course, our number one seed is Bugs Bunny.
Before we start,
okay.
I think we need to, I know we go criteria, whatever kind of criteria, but I feel like I at least need some help to figure out what criteria we should use for this, because this is, I know this is going to be tough for me. Like,
yeah.
Who do I find the funniest? Maybe?
I think in the spirit of Gremlins, Gremlins 2 in particular, it should be the winner of who wins in a cartoonishly violent fight.
All right.
Like, sometimes it will be by sheer force of strength. Sometimes it will be use of
brains.
Gadgets. Sometimes it will be brains. You're outthinking
your
opponent. Sometimes it will be, well, we just want them to win.
Yeah, I like that. All right, continue.
So we're starting with our number one seed, which of course is Bugs Bunny.
Of course.
He is up against our number 16 seed, Gossamer. Now, do you remember Gossamer?
The big red guy.
Yeah, the big red guy. He looks like a giant carpet.
Yeah, and he's got boots on or something.
And he's got eyes and he has hands.
You know, for a long time when I was young, I would still call this guy Sweetums. You know,
he looks a lot like Sweetums from the Muppets.
He's basically the Sweetums. Correct me if I'm wrong, the main cartoon short that Gossamer showed up, did he encounter Bugs? Was that who he was up against? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure Bugs bested him, as he always does.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is a no-brainer. Gotta go with Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to take down Bugs Bunny.
It's going
to
be very hard.
So we'll give Bugs Bunny the first round. Essentially, it's a bye.
Yeah.
All right. So Bugs Bunny advances.
Of course.
Next is our 8 seed versus our 9 seed, Tweety versus Sylvester.
Oh, man.
Amazing how that worked out.
Kind of torn here because if we're going historically, Tweety Bird always gets the upper hand, you know, against Sylvester. I guess Tweety Bird is pretty innocent, right?
Yeah.
At one point, I was like, is Tweety Bird just conceited and getting his her way? Was Tweety Bird a male or female?
I
never
know.
But Sylvester I always felt bad for, you know, sometimes. And I was just like, but I guess I got to go with Tweety Bird because Sylvester never wins.
So now we're going to our number 4 seed, the Roadrunner.
Ah.
Not up against the
not
usual
Wile E. Coyote. Okay.
Up against Yosemite Sam.
Oh, okay. Well, if we're saying who's going to win in the end in a fight, in a brains versus brawn situation.
Of fights, this is very heavily weighed against any of the antagonists.
Yes,
characters,
exactly, right.
Because they are always getting the short end of the stick.
And just to be honest, most of these scenarios, I'm going to lean into the traditional how a short would go as opposed to like, I'm going to subvert it and say, hey, Yosemite Sam's going to win this time. I mean, Bugs bested Yosemite Sam all the time, and Roadrunner bested Wile E. Coyote, even not even knowing. So I got to go with Roadrunner.
All right. But this one might actually be a little more difficult for
you.
Because we have Wile E. Coyote
versus
Elmer Fudd.
Oh, okay.
So it's coyote season.
It is coyote.
And Elmer Fudd has gone hunting.
Wow. I have a clear winner for this one.
All right.
I'm going to say Wile E. Coyote. And the reason why is I feel like Elmer has all the tools to his disposal, and he gets bested because he's dumb.
Yep.
He can get talked out of things. Wile E. Coyote is actually pretty smart, but the fault is in the products he gets.
Yes.
They're deficient. They go wrong. So I feel like if he had the right tools, he had the right opportunity, he's not usually outsmarted. He's just, it's something that goes wrong.
Yeah.
So it's out of his control. So between that, I feel like if things are going Wile E. Coyote's way, which they never do, I think he would best Elmer Fudd.
And I think if this was a cartoon, if it was coyote season,
yeah,
he would be cast as the hero.
Yeah, I think so too.
Elmer Fudd would still be on the short end.
Bet.
All right, so next, this is another one that could get interesting. We have Daffy Duck versus Michigan J. Frog.
Okay.
Because, I mean, Michigan J. Frog's probably just going to play dead.
He's just going to play dead.
And Daffy's going to get more and more frustrated.
That's true. So you're saying he's getting more worked up.
Yeah.
Because Michigan J. Frog is not reacting. But then, people are wrong, can't Daffy just do something to him? Because he won't fight back or anything.
Yeah, I picture Daffy getting so frustrated that he just grabs him by the legs and slams him against the concrete.
Exactly. And he's not going to fight back because, again, people are watching.
Yeah.
So I go with Daffy.
Daffy, of course, was our number 2 seed.
Ah, so of course.
Moving up. Next, we have Speedy Gonzalez versus Foghorn Leghorn.
Okay, man. This is interesting. Well, I'd have to say, Speedy was always up against Sylvester as well, right? It was either Speedy or Tweety was usually the mix-up
or
the matchup.
I don't remember.
It was someone after Speedy Gonzalez.
Yes.
And he's really fast. He's super fast. Foghorn Leghorn speaks really fast.
I say.
Over your head. But I do believe there were episodes where he got comeuppance.
Yeah.
Tested. I don't think Speedy ever did.
Yeah, I think Speedy's going to take this
I think
this
Speedy
one.
Wins this one.
I think he's run circles around
he
Foghorn
He speeds
Leghorn.
To the finish line. Yipa, yipa, andale, arriba.
That's questionably racist.
That's what he says.
Next, we have Porky Pig, our number 3 seed, versus our 14 seed, Pepe Le Pew.
Oh, man. Well,
I mean,
Pepe Le Pew
he's
a lover,
not
a
fighter.
You knew that. You were going the same thing I was. I've seen episodes where this is going to be that kind of same scenario as Daffy and Michigan J. Frog, because Porky's gotten really worked up.
Yeah.
Out of things. He gets frustrated. And I feel like Pepe Le Pew is going to be very nonchalant against
him. I feel like Pepe Le Pew is going to show up for the fight and then wander off because a cat walks
by.
Yeah, because
a cat who looks hot with a streak on.
Like, he's not actually going to lose.
Yeah.
He's just going to
He's going to lose by default.
Yeah.
All right, let's go with Porky.
And next, we have another one of the classic antagonists, or actually two kind of antagonists. We have the Tasmanian Devil and Marvin the Martian. I think there's a clear-cut winner here.
Tasmanian Devil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just force of nature.
Force of nature. Again, and Marvin the Martian is someone who always loses when he's up against someone, so.
His ray gun is going to backfire.
That's true. Oh, my ray gun.
What a maroon. Speaking of what a maroon, that brings us to round two. Bugs Bunny versus Tweety Bird.
Oh, ha ha ha. This is a tough one, because Tweety's so innocent, but Bugs is actually smart and can be cunning and conniving, so...
Yeah.
Tweety Bird might fall for a scheme.
Like, I'm picturing Tweety using his innocence to evade all of Bugs's schemes.
I picture that, too. But in the end, I like Bugs better.
Yeah. Like, if it were a cartoon, Bugs would somehow end up being the antagonist.
Yes.
But this is one where he's going to win.
Yeah, exactly. We want Bugs to advance.
And next, unsurprisingly, we have the Roadrunner versus Wile E.
Coyote. Oh, well, you know how that's going to go. Roadrunner.
Is it going to go that way, though?
It's going to go the Roadrunner.
All right.
I said before, I'm going to lean into how the cartoon goes.
That's fair.
That's kind of how my pick is. He beat Elmer Fudd because I'm saying everything's going his way. He's getting the right tools. Whenever he's up against the Roadrunner,
picked up Elmer Fudd's gun?
It wouldn't work.
It would be
an Acme gun, and it would explode in his face.
Fair enough. All right. Roadrunner advances to face Bugs Bunny in the next round.
Ooh.
Next, we have Daffy Duck versus Speedy Gonzalez.
Oh, this is difficult. Because in this scenario, there's a lot of archetypes of these Looney Tune characters where they're just like oblivious imbeciles that nothing ever happens to. Roadrunner, Tweety, Speedy Gonzalez, right? Daffy is going to get all worked up. He's going to become the antagonist. And, I mean, I love Daffy Duck so much, though. Like when he's the protagonist, he's the best. He's awesome. If he's the antagonist, usually they always lose against Speedy Gonzalez.
Well,
so.
Now just try to imagine a cartoon where he's the protagonist.
Okay.
And Speedy Gonzalez is the antagonist. How does that go?
That never happens, though. Speedy's never some kind of scheme or some kind of wacky personality, and I think it would actually trick him.
So it's your call.
As we get into these lower rounds, I'm just going to go with who I prefer more. I like Daffy Duck.
All right.
Yeah.
Then we have Porky Pig versus Taz, the Tasmanian Devil.
This is going to be sure fight and brute force, and we're going to go with the Tasmanian Devil.
All right. So that brings us to our final four. First, it's Bugs Bunny versus the Roadrunner.
Yeah, this is tough. This is very tough.
Wasn't there the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie?
Yeah, wasn't that what it was called? Yeah.
Yeah.
And they would just switch off of the shorts?
Yeah.
Basically, switching off of shorts is not what you think of. Something else. It's different.
That one got a PG-13 rating.
What's your thoughts on this one? I want to hear you.
Again, if we are imagining the cartoon, I have to imagine Bugs is trying to catch the Roadrunner.
He is trying to catch him. But I feel like he's a bit more clever, more savvy about it.
And I have to imagine he catches the Roadrunner and decides to let him go.
Yeah.
I think that means Bugs wins, but he wins honorably.
He has a change of heart.
Yeah, like he's like, okay, I accept the victory. I am not going to punish you for your loss.
All right, I like that. I was going to probably pick Bugs anyways because, I mean, Bugs and Daffy are always like the best. So it's going to be
tough. And that
brings
us down to Daffy versus the Tasmanian Devil.
Daffy versus the Tasmanian Devil. Oh, man, we're setting up an epic final here. So I think Daffy is smarter and more conniving that he could actually trick the Tasmanian Devil.
Okay.
So he would kind of pull a scheme and he'd go, blah, 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 and maybe spin off a cliff.
Yeah, there would be a lot of spitting.
Yeah, that's true.
So that means our finals are, unsurprisingly, the 1 seed versus the 2 seed, Bugs Bunny versus Daffy Duck.
This might not be as hard as I thought, because although I love these two, it could really go either way. In this final thing, I gotta lean into how it would go in rabbit season, duck season, rabbit season, duck season. Bugs always best Daffy, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of feel bad because we're just picking the number one seed and rolling them
so
all
often
through.
The number one seed is going to rise.
That's
all
true.
The way.
It's what the forces wanted. It's what the cartoon gods were speaking to me.
All right. Congratulations, Bugs Bunny. You
blah,
are
blah,
the
blah,
king
blah,
of the
blah,
thing.
That's all, folks. All right. King of the thing. All right, so next up, what we're going to do is we're going to stack rank Gremlins 2, the new batch.
Oh.
Key thing about this stack
I would say rank, we have to start with Gremlins.
Okay, because I was going to say, this movie's so different from all the other ones.
Yeah.
It's going to be difficult. So Gremlins, we actually have at number 15.
Yeah, it's ranked.
It's rather high
it's ranked
up.
High on our list.
It is rather high
now,
up.
Now, would you put this above or below the first Gremlins?
I'd put it above the first Gremlins.
I kind of think I would, too.
I mean, obviously, the nostalgia factor is the biggest thing. I watch this movie all the time, but it's more fun.
It is.
It's more
it
fun.
Is.
How high up? I don't know. It's going to be tough. I'm kind of thinking, I don't know if we could, like, we have the movie that's preceding it is Independence Day.
Yeah.
What would you say against that? I don't know if we can go above it, but I might have to just stick it above Gremlins.
Yeah, in between Independence Day and Gremlins.
Yeah. I'd be down with that. Okay. Yeah. There we go.
Fair enough.
That was pretty easy.
That's
sounds
good
to me.
Good slot for it.
I think we're kind of end this episode with a very quick. As we said, this movie has so many cameos and so many actors and a lot of ones Joe Dante had used in his previous movies, The Burbs, The Explorers. Anyone who we just don't know where they went, they dropped off the map. I think we should just check out quickly in our segment of
Oh, where have these actors gone? Oh, where could they be?
Probably not famous anymore.
What's your thoughts, Brian? Because a bit of this might be a bit of a rehash.
Yeah,
we're
I feel
like
we've
Zach
already
Galligan.
Talked about Zach Galligan in our original Gremlins one.
Yeah. I mean, so
I'm not sure if we did, but I'm guessing we did.
I'm sure we did. I'm sure we wanted to know what happened to Zach Galligan. Do we want to start with John Glover? I mean, we did bring up how after this movie, this is the first movie I had ever seen him in.
Yep.
And then he did Smallville, where he played Lex's dad, Lionel Luthor.
Even in Batman and Robin.
But that was even a few years ago.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that was a few years back. So what has he been up to since?
So lately, he was on The Good Wife.
Mm-hmm.
He was on Agent Carter.
Oh, okay. I think I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. He's still fairly active.
He's
he has
still
one
doing
upcoming
stuff.
Project, The Extraordinary Farewell.
Sounds extraordinary.
He was in the TV movie The Lost Wife of Robert Durst.
Oh, that was a Lifetime movie.
Yes.
That's funny.
He was on 3 episodes of Tron Uprising.
Oh, that's like a cartoon, right?
Yep. Smallville, Tron Evolution, the video game.
He's all into the Tron, huh?
Yeah, he loves the Tron.
Loves the Tron.
A lot of TV work in the past, you know, decade or so.
Okay, so there's John Glover. Next up, actually, someone just looking at the cast list here, the woman who is Billy's boss, who is aggressively
Marla.
Hitting on him, Marla Bloodstone, played by Haviland Morris.
All right. She has 50 acting credits.
Okay.
Most recently, Quarry from Cinemax.
Oh, yeah, that's on Cinemax.
2 episodes.
Yeah.
Better Off Single.
Don't know what that is.
Elementary. She was in 1 episode.
Okay. Yeah, that's recent.
1 episode
show.
Of Blue Blood.
Blue Bloods. My mom's favorite show.
She was in Burning Blue. One episode of The Good Wife.
She just keeps doing blue shows.
Yep. She likes the blue. In terms of credits that people might recognize her from, she was on 1 episode of SVU.
Of course.
1 episode of Sex and the City. 2 episodes of Law and Order. So different characters. She was Karen Pruitt in Home Alone 3.
I don't.
Which
I think I've seen part
seen
of it.
One.
Yeah, part of it.
Prior to Gremlins 2, The New Batch, on 1 episode of Family Ties, she was in 16 Candles.
Oh,
as
really?
Caroline.
Okay, I think that's what I recognize her from, maybe. Yeah. Okay, interesting. There we go. So Haviland Morris. Oh, here's an interesting one. the woman that hosted the cooking show. Now, she's one of those women that is like always a character actor in a lot of 80s movies.
Yep.
I feel like she was in some movie where she was like worked at the DMV or something. A lot of bit
well,
parts. So,
she's
yeah.
Kathleen Freeman okay. as Microwave Marge.
Microwave Marge, yes.
She passed away in 2001.
Yes, I figured as
at
much.
The age of 82. Her final film credit was Old Woman in Shrek.
Oh, I thought that was the name of the project. I'm an old woman.
She was also Joe Dirt's foster mother, Jane King, in Ready to Rumble.
Okay. Yeah, that wrestling movie with,
yep.
like, David Arquette.
In 1998, she was all about the Christmas, because she was in I'll Be Home for Christmas with
JTT.
JTT as Tom Girl Gloria.
I don't know what that means.
And she was in Richie Rich's Christmas Wish as Miss Peabody.
I'm guessing that wasn't Macaulay Culkin.
That was not Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
It was David Gallagher.
Did he smash watermelons?
No.
Okay.
She was also on an episode of The Clueless TV show, an episode of Home Improvement. She was Mother Mary Stigmata in The Blues Brothers and Blues Brothers 2000.
Ah, yes. That's where I know her from. That is definitely it.
She also did the voice of a heavyset woman in Hercules.
What? That was her character's name?
Yes.
Just a heavyset woman.
Peg's mom on Married with Children.
Okay. I believe she was also the evil mother in Naked Gun 33 and a Third.
She was
right?
Muriel.
Muriel, which was Fred Ward's mom.
She was also Miss Olin in Hocus Pocus.
Oh, okay, right. I don't remember who Miss Olin was. We watched
this
that movie.
The one that this woman played.
Okay.
She was Elder Number One in Fern Gully.
Oh, I remember that movie.
Yeah.
Robin
she was
Williams
Gritzy
was
in Dutch.
Oh, Dutch. Oh, we got to do Dutch sometimes. That's a good movie.
Mrs. Crackshell in Nurse Hatchet in DuckTales, 10 episodes.
Oh, nice.
Mother Superior on one episode of The Golden Girls.
Oh, I love that.
5 episodes of Growing Pains. She was Sophie, Estelle, Marge, and Madge.
Wow. She moved
Maybe
along.
She was the same Marge as she was in this movie. Maybe Growing Pains is in the Gremlin cinematic universe.
That'd be awesome.
Ma on one episode of Chippendale Rescue Rangers.
Nice.
She was a nurse on Head of the Class. She was a woman on Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah, we're still in the 80s. Her acting career goes all the way back to... God, I'm still going.
One episode of
1948!
Alf. She has 292 acting credits.
Wow.
She was in Teen Wolf 2.
Okay.
As the admissions lady.
Ah, the famous admissions lady.
And she was in Inner Space, Dragnet. I'm not going to go past the
80s. Yeah, I think that's pretty good. Heart Beeps. Because
Heart with Andy Beeps. Kaufman and Bernadette
Peters. Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. Heart Beeps.
And then we're into the 70s, so we will... Kojak. She was Rosetta Stone on Batman, 1968.
That's a character?
Apparently.
Did she just translate languages for
Probably.
People? That's an awesome power.
A very illustrious career that she should have been very proud of.
Excellent. Yes, you will be missed. I mean, I'm looking at this cast list, Brian, and there's just so many people. I don't think we can even... I mean, a lot of these people were just bit parts in this movie, so I don't know if it makes sense to go much further down the rabbit hole, especially because most of the people I'd be interested in, we kind of already covered. And they're, okay, let's end on this. Mr. Katsuji, Getty Watanabe, the cameraman.
Yes.
What's Getty been up to?
So, as we know, he was in 16 Candles.
16 Candles. Gung Ho.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, he has one upcoming project called You Drive Me. It's... Capital U, capital D, R-I-V-E.
You Drive Me Crazy, like the Britney Spears?
You Drive Me, or A Drive Me, but I'm assuming it's You Drive Me.
Maybe the U stands for Uber.
He's been doing some voice work on Bravest Warriors.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
And Pickle and Peanuts. He was in The Last Word as a gardener, or a character named Gardener.
Yeah.
Parental Guidance with Billy Crystal. He played Mr. Chang.
Okay, yeah.
The 7-Year Hitch, a TV movie. He was Mr. Fujimura.
Oh, I have. He was in the 47 Ronin movie with Keanu from 2013.
Yes, he was.
He played the Kabuki actor. He was the troop leader.
I overlooked
that.
That
was
one.
A bad movie.
Scooby-Doo and the Samurai Sword. He was the voice of Kenji.
Oh.
The Mulan and Mulan 2. He was the voice of Ling.
Oh, okay.
He was Wing in Alfie, 2004.
Did you mean to go from Ling to Wing?
That's just the way his career went. He was Nurse Yosh Takada on ER for 58 episodes.
Wow. That must have been after I stopped watching. I don't know. There were certain seasons I kind of dropped off.
From 97 to 2003. He was the Japanese proctor in Slackers in 2002.
I think I remember that.
He played Gangster One on one episode of Jackie Chan Adventures, Kenji on one episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Batman Beyond, who's Dr. Suzuki and Principal, Secret Agent Man. He was Ling number two. He was on The Simpsons, two episodes, Japanese Father and Factory Foreman. So the Japanese Father is, well, one of them is the episode in Marge We Trust, yep. And the other's 30 Minutes Over Tokyo.
Yeah.
So I think Japanese Father is in Marge We Trust.
I think we're going to end that there then. There we go.
Also the Asian Tourist in Armageddon.
All right. Very good. Well, I think that kind of wraps up this segment of Where, Oh, Where Have These Actors Gone? Brian, any kind of final thoughts about Gremlins 2, The New Batch, or
no.
Life in general? I mean,
nothing.
Okay. What would you do if you were to get a Mogwai? How responsible do you think you'd be?
Oh, I would be horrible.
You'd be bad at it, yeah?
We would be overrun with Gremlins immediately.
That's why there's a Gremlin coming out of your McDonald's bag.
Yes.
And on that note, thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this mini-episode of the $5 Bin Podcast. I'm Mark, and for Brian and Rick, just remember, you can always paint the grass green. Good night.
Goodbye.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah?
Let me tell you about the three rules of maintaining a gremlin car.
Okay.
First, always get it wet. You gotta wash that car three times a day.
Oh, man.
Next, put it out in the driveway so it can get sunlight. He's gotta get some natural sunlight. That way, when, you know, the honeys drive by, they can see it glisten off of that sweet gremlin.
Oh, my.
Sweet paint job. And then, the final rule, the most important rule about gremlin car ownership. Don't by any means eat in it after midnight. Just don't eat it in general. Messes up the interior. You get M&Ms down the dashboard. That car won't be cherry anymore.
But I want my value meal.
This is how macho guys talk.
Oh, gremlin I am.
Thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this mini-episode of the $5 Bin Podcast. And then join us next time for our next full movie reviews it. You can find us on the social interwebs. Tweet us at the number $5 Bin, P-O-D, like us on Facebook, or email us at the $5bin.podcast@gmail.com. Download and subscribe to all our episodes in iTunes. And when you do, hey, why not leave a nice rating and review? Helps others to find the podcast as well. Why, thank you. For information about Brian and my improv organization, Natick Improv, and upcoming workshops and performances, you can visit natickimprov.com or like Natick Improv on Facebook. A big thanks once again to Jenny Weech and Jeff Kimball for the $5 Bin theme song. And until next time, Cinemaniacs, hasta la vista, baby Looney Tunes. Blah, 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 blah. That's all, folks.